Quantum Connection Podcast. We are your hosts, Vanessa and Heather.
Join us as we explore the new quantum health paradigm.
Learn how to reconnect with nature to regain your health and to mitigate the impact of modern living.
As quantum health coaches and classical homeopaths, our mission is to inspire and motivate you on your healing journey.
This is for educational purposes only.
Let's dive into today's show.
Hello, everyone, and welcome back to the Quantum Connection Podcast. My name is Heather Crimson, here with my co-host, Vanessa Baldwin. Today, we have a very special guest with us, Dr. Andrew Kaufman, more informally known as Andy. So we welcome him to the show today. He is a recovering psychiatrist. I just love that so much. He has basically created a whole new path for himself based on medical sovereignty and in being with the truth about our healthcare system and about health in general. So welcome so much to the show, Andy.
Oh, thank you. It's nice to be here.
Yeah. So to start off, maybe we could just begin with you helping us understand how you went from what sounds like a pretty much fully conventional paradigm existence to where you're at now, which for me is super exciting because I forgot to let you know off before we start recording that I'm also interested in the whole financial reality and how I've also exited that paradigm. I like Brandon Joe Williams. He's like somebody I've been following for a couple of years. So I forgot to mention that to you. So you've like pretty much extricated yourself from all of the conventional stuff.
Well, I don't know if I quite look at it that way, but I certainly interact with the systems differently. I'm trying to perform my proper role, which is much better than being a indentured servant, which is what most of us essentially live our lives as. But for me, the way I came to this material is, one, practicing conventional medicine, initially in oncology in my first medical career, and then as a psychiatrist, and observing that none of the patients got better with the treatments that we were giving. And there was a pivotal educational experience I had when I was doing my residency at Duke, when they had this mandatory weekly conference that in our first and second year we had to attend, and it was called a critical appraisal of the literature. And they essentially taught us how to look at published clinical studies and scrutinize them to uncover biases and, incorrect interpretations. And we did that, you know, every week, and essentially showed that all of the clinical papers in psychiatry were full of flaws and that we couldn't really trust the conclusions, yet at the same time they were all agreeing on these analyses, we were going to the clinic and expected to just do all the things that we had learned were not effective. And this created some dissonance for me. And as I continued to practice, once I got out of my training and had more authority to follow my own clinical decision-making, I began minimizing medications at first and then tapering patients off medications and trying other interventions like psychotherapy, for example, which I was permitted to do, but also nutritional and cleansing, which was very, very difficult to do within the constraints of the system, and also, you know, violates your license agreement to only use the standard of care and not use things that actually are helpful.
Right. It's out of the scope of practice and all these other little, you know.
Right. So I had to, you know, figure out a way to no longer be under the restrictions of a license, because, you know, that's a contract essentially between an individual and the state to get permission to break the law. Right, by administering poisons that are controlled substances, performing surgery, right, cutting someone open would be assault. And but you have permission to do those things now, as long as you do them in the way the state specifies.
Mm-hmm.
I have so much respect for you that you saw that what you were, doing with your patients, wasn't working, and then you like wanted to find some other ways to help them beyond just, giving them medications and whatnot, because not every doctor does that. There are a lot of doctors who just continue on and they know that what they're doing is not working, or maybe they don't want to
Right.
open their eyes to it, or they think there's no other ways and there's nothing else that they can do. So I have so much respect for doctors that have come from the typical medical model and then they shift to this alternative way of thinking and knowing that there are other ways that we can support health besides pharmaceuticals and whatnot, and that these things are actually can be quite dangerous to our health, as a matter of fact. So just
Yeah,
kudos to
Vanessa, I
you and
think
thank you.
I appreciate the gratitude, but let me just explain why it was a little bit easier for me to observe this, and most psychiatrists really never see what's going on. One thing is that we're never taught in our medical training to assess our own outcomes, and certainly not to do it in any systematic or analytical way. Although it certainly should be done for surgeons, right, so that they know their complication rate with various procedures, and it really is a responsibility that we all have in order to improve our practice over time based on the outcomes of our patients. So I recognized when I was in my training that most doctors are in private practice of one sort or the other, and that means that they have to run a business or be part of a business that's run by business people, which necessitates that they have a high patient volume in order to get enough reimbursement to cover the overhead costs, which could be substantial. They include things like malpractice insurance premiums, which are not something that most people are accustomed to paying, but it's very expensive to be a doctor just to maintain your license and board certification and your DEA license. You spend thousands of dollars a year to maintain those things. So you need to generate enough revenue to make it profitable for the business and to support your salary. So most doctors would see, up to six patients an hour for 10 minutes. Now, when you spend 10 minutes with someone, that's enough time to introduce and develop rapport, but it's not enough time to do any kind of meaningful evaluation or intervention. And I specifically only worked in jobs that did not have that requirement because I knew I could not really do anything that way. But I probably 95% of doctors work that way. So I had an hour to an hour and a half with every new patient, and that was, my requirement. And in doing that and then spending time following up after, there might be an intervention, a prescription, a therapy, something else like that, or simply time passing, I can see what kind of progress is being made. And so I observed that based upon prescriptions, there was no progress that was meaningful. So they might have felt a little bit less disturbed in some way, but they didn't make any meaningful change in their life. Like they didn't improve their productivity or their relationships or whatever situation was going on. And many times things continue to get worse or persist for a very long time without resolving. So the other doctors who are seeing so many patients and spending so little time, they don't keep track of anything. And can't really even understand the nature of the problem that their patient is presenting for. So it's just a big black box. They write prescriptions all day, and then everyone goes out there and they don't know what really happens, and they come back or they don't come back. And when they come back, usually it's, oh, I'm not doing better. And then because then you only have another 10 minutes, so okay. Let's just add on another prescription or switch it out or that kind of thing. And you never really see that things don't improve when with that approach, but you still the money keeps coming in. And so, you figure, okay, well, everybody would be complaining or something if nothing was helping, but they just disappear. Maybe they go to another doctor. Maybe they look outside the system. Maybe they end up, you know, killing themselves. You just don't know.
Yeah, it's so unethical when you think about it like that. And it's hard to see, I think, when you've been saturated in it from the beginning, but you did see it, you're saying. Like, you recognized early on what was really happening, and you were looking for something more substantive and actually that actually was helping people. So you were diligent, or rather you selected positions, it sounds like, where you could actually work in the way that felt like you were being in your own integrity as a healer.
Mm-hmm. Yes, exactly. But I wouldn't necessarily say that this practice is unethical, because everyone is agreeing to participate, right? And it's perfectly...
That's a whole nother thing.
Yeah, I know, but it's, you know, we have to realize that we're the responsible ones for our own health. Mm-hmm. And there's information readily available to see how dangerous psychiatric treatment is.
Mm-hmm.
And there are plenty of information available of ways that people have successfully overcome lots of problems. So when individuals go to a doctor and don't educate themselves, don't ask for information, and just blindly follow orders, doctor's orders, really, that's how they're referred to.
Yep.
Well, then whatever the natural consequence of that is, they agreed to it up front. And if they're ignorant to it, right, then the caveat emptor applies. Right? Buyer beware, because this is a commercial transaction mm-hmm. that you're doing with the healthcare system. And you have to realize that that's what's going on. Just look at the documents they want you to sign, and you'll see that they're legal contracts.
Yep.
And so we can't remain ignorant to this and expect to have healthy and good outcomes.
Yeah, but then I remember when I was going through my own health crisis, every time I pushed against the doctors or I questioned them, they try to like talk down to you and make them, you think that they know more, and you bring up things that are alternative or bring up things that, right. You know, they don't want to hear it. They want to just totally downplay it. And I can see why some people who are, you know, you have to become educated. Number one, like you said, great point. That's an excellent point. You have to take your own health into your own hands, and you have to become educated. But I can see how some people might be like, oh, they ask a question, and the doctor's like, oh, no, that's just not, you know, they like totally brush it off all the time. And they've done it to me, and I can come back.
That's part of the contract, Vanessa.
Yeah. And I come back with my educated background and say, no, I also know this, you know, but they don't like it. Like, then now you're deemed as this patient who is, you know, not non-compliant or whatever. And it's just like, what, we can't have that. They can't have mutual respect for you unless you are, you know, that MD title, I find. I don't know. That's my experience. But I, you know, yeah.
Well, let's just look at the nature of what's going on in this relationship and the interaction. So first of all, you know, normally what would happen would be that you would have a health issue, and then you would seek out someone with expertise, and you would ask them to provide information and help you figure out, you know, what's going on with your health and how you can make it better. And in exchange for that, you offer them some kind of payment. Now, when people go to their healthcare provider out in the current system, that's not what happens. They're not paying. The insurance company's paying. Now, they may be a member of the insurance company or have an agreement with the insurance company, but the doctor that they're going to is getting paid by the insurance company, not by them. So that means, who does the doctor work for? They work for the insurance company. So they are not really concerned with what you want. They're concerned with what the insurance company wants, because that's going to determine how they get reimbursed
mm-hmm.
for the mm-hmm. service. And the insurance companies will have clinical practice guidelines. They'll often have contracts with pharmaceutical companies and have a formulary that, you know, they want you to prescribe certain drugs. They want you to get certain tests for various reasons. And the doctors are making decisions based on that. And also, if you look at the contract that you enter into with the medical consent form, most medical consent forms that I've seen, you're actually establishing a trust where the doctor, you're giving the doctor the ability to make healthcare decisions for you, or the hospital entity or any professional that would be involved in your relationship. And you're giving away your authority mm-hmm. to them, and willingly by signing. So, and you've done this because you didn't read the document that you signed. And if you read it, you didn't understand it. And I'm guilty of this, you know, as well earlier in my life. But now that I have, you know, started to investigate these things, you can see that it's all preventable. And if you were going to an auto mechanic to fix your car, and they talked down to you and wouldn't answer your questions or tried to perform repairs that were unnecessary and price gouge you, you know, you, what would you do? You would say, I'm not doing business there anymore. Mm-hmm. I'm going to find someone else. So you might even report them to the Better Business Bureau. You might sue them. There's all kinds of recourse. But when it comes to a doctor, because of their authority and prestige in our cultural paradigm, right? People feel that they have to acquiesce and act like a child and say, okay, mommy or daddy, you know, I'll do what you say.
Scary.
It's true, though. That's just how society is set up. Our whole system is so backwards. And yeah, it's really frustrating. It's like I live in New York, and it's maybe you have a solution for me, Andy, about this, because you can't run your own blood work here. You can't like just go to like pick a lab and pay for it yourself, like from online labs and whatnot. They don't allow it. So that's the only reason why I visit a doctor, is because I want to get some labs drawn and I want to tell them what I want to be drawn. And he gave me a hard time about like specific labs that I wanted. And his reason was we don't run that lab because we don't have a drug for that. When we have that number off, like if that number is off, there is no drug for it. I said, okay, but you may not know what to do with that number when it's off, but I'm going to know what to do with that number when it's off. Let me
ask you, what is the utility of blood tests? Why would you want them?
I wanted the leptin to see what my serum leptin was.
Why did you want that?
Just to see what was going on. As I suspected, it was low.
But what do you mean? How would it tell you what's going on?
It would tell me a little bit what's going on with my metabolism and my immune system and my thyroid.
What would it tell you about those things?
It would give me some insight in my lifestyle of what to do and what changes to make.
No. You're not answering my question.
I'm sorry.
What's the scientific evidence that a leptin level correlates with any physiologic status?
I mean, I have to, you know.
All right, let me ask a more basic question.
Yeah.
How would you even determine that leptin is in our bodies?
I don't know the answer. You have
let's
an answer?
Say that, let's say you were able to determine that it's actually in our bodies. How would you know what level is a normal level?
Oh, well, it's based off of everybody else's levels, right? Is that what you're going
to? How do you know everyone else's levels are normal or not?
You don't. This is true. This is a good point.
So
taking up all of these things.
I know I'm asking some difficult questions here, yeah. But my point that I'm trying to make is that blood tests are pretty much worthless.
Well, that's good to know.
If you want to know how your health is, simply observe your experience. Mm-hmm. Do you have any aches and pains or discomfort or anything that you identify as a problem with your health? Are you able to perform all of the things that you want to do? Like if you want to run a marathon, can you run a marathon? If you want to play with your grandkids, are you able to do that? Are you able to do, you know, the physical work that needs to be done around your house? If those are the ways that you know how your health is.
So Andy, let me interrupt you. So is this how you go about if you were to, I don't know if you offer individual consultations, but how would you go about from this place that you're at right now with Vanessa to then determining some sort of intervention? Would you mind sharing that with us, like your treatment approach?
Yeah, absolutely. And I do have a consultation service where I can educate people and help them figure out what is the root causes of their health issue.
Okay.
But really, there's only a couple of categories that produce, you know, states of dis-ease, and they just amount to poisoning, malnutrition, and trauma. And the trauma can be physical or psychological.
Okay.
So, you know, by simply having a discussion and hearing someone's story of how the health changed over time, how, you know, problems manifested, what was going on in their life at that time, you can often get to the bottom of what are the causal or contributing factors. Now, sometimes you can't definitively determine that with an interview, but based on the type of pathology that you see, there are patterns. So for example, with cardiovascular disease, there's more and more evidence that a variety of fat-soluble toxins are responsible. And these include things like seed oils. And perhaps the chemicals associated with microplastics. Now they found microplastics in aortic valve leaflets and things like that. So if you have that situation, you can, if you can't figure out, you know, what is clearly the cause, you could approach it by a detox protocol that will address fat-soluble toxins. You know, there's often dietary factors that are involved, right? Like high sugar and high carb diets and highly processed food diets. So you can, you know, simply change those things and then observe if the body recovers. But blood tests can be extremely misleading because they, there is really no way to clearly determine what these things mean, and even a basic question of, are these things actually in our body? And, you know, we can talk about like vitamin C as one example, because when, first of all, they thought that there was some nutritional component before they actually identified vitamin C at all. And they thought scurvy was due to a nutritional deficiency. But in order to, you know, get this compound out of a living creature or a plant, I forget where they first isolated it from, they did a number of chemical reactions on the biological material. So how do we know that those chemical reactions didn't change whatever substance was in the biological organism to begin with, and that whatever the white crystalline powder was at the end of a series of chemical processes is the same as an actual substance that was in the body? It could be a substance in the body that was transformed through this chemistry, and it's a novel, you know, chemical at this point. And anyone who goes back and looks at the discovery of various compounds that are said to be, you know, important biologically, you'd have to ask this kind of question, you know, how can it be known? Exactly. And then the problem of how do you determine the normal values, they just apply a statistical model to a population of where it's unknown who in the population has good health or not good health. And the range of normal values includes only a portion of the actual normal values based on the statistical model. So at least 4% of normal values lie outside what's listed as the normal range. So when you get an abnormal value, is it part of that 4% that's really normal? Mm-hmm. Or is it actually abnormal? Now, I've seen many, many times when tests completely mislead people. So one example is, and I saw this so much when I was practicing emergency psychiatry that I had to question it, because I was originally taught that really the only cases of low thyroid are from treatment for high thyroid, like having surgery or radioactive thyroid ablation. But I noticed that something like half of all the psychiatric patients that came to the ER were taking thyroid hormone. Mm-hmm. And I was like, this is way too many. So what's going on? And what I found out is that when Synthroid was invented, it was the first time there was a synthetic thyroid hormone pharmaceutical, and that made it very profitable because before that, they would just freeze dry a thyroid gland from a cow or a pig, and that's your thyroid medicine. And by the way, it has all the thyroid hormones because there's more than one.
Mm-hmm.
But the pharmaceutical company purified, you know, just one of the alleged thyroid hormones, developed it into a pharmaceutical, and it was very profitable. And at this time, they basically hyped up the diagnosis of low thyroid and made arbitrary cutoffs in certain blood tests. But it's known that during a psychiatric crisis, your thyroid blood values become abnormal temporarily, and it's not related to your thyroid, it's related to the psychiatric crisis. This is also well known with a medical illness, an acute medical illness, and it even has a name. It's called sick euthyroid syndrome. Euthyroid means normal thyroid, but sick means when you're sick, and it causes your blood values of your thyroid to change and look abnormal, but it doesn't represent actual thyroid disease. And this is how most of the psychiatric patients, or all of them actually, were diagnosed, because they come in for a psychiatric crisis. The psychiatrist is taught to get, you know, blood tests for medical clearance, like the false impression that if you get a few blood tests and they're normal, that the person is healthy physically. But, you know, I've seen patients with metastatic cancer and all their blood tests are normal. Wow. So that's a, you know, a false sense of security. Mm-hmm. I've also seen patients with way abnormal lab values that were perfectly fine. So, you know, it cuts both ways. Wow. And then they find, as a result of the psychiatric crisis, the thyroid values are slightly abnormal, and they just start them on thyroid medicine. And then every doctor knows that you need thyroid medicine forever if you're taking it, otherwise you'll die. So they just keep prescribing it. And in my consultation practice, I've worked with at least 24 clients who this happened to. And it was easy to determine that they didn't have actual thyroid disease because they never had one symptom of thyroid disease.
Wow.
And they all are able to taper off their thyroid hormone successfully and never look back. So this is an example of how blood tests can really mislead you. Now, there may be occasionally some utility for a simple thing, like, for example, if someone is trying to reverse their diabetes and they're taking insulin for their blood sugar, it's important for them to perhaps check their blood sugar so that it doesn't go too low as they recover from the diabetes. So that, you know, there is occasionally some utility. You can, you know, get a blood smear and look at it under a microscope and count the different cell types, and that can give you some information.
Is that live blood analysis?
No, I'm just talking about a regular blood count, like a CBC, mm-hmm. Complete blood count.
Oh.
Live blood analysis, you know, can be useful, but, most of the practitioners using it aren't properly trained and don't really know what they're doing, unfortunately. But, you know, in my consultation service, I find that none of these things are really necessary, that just by talking, I can tell what's going on. And many times this is confirmed because the clients already went and got a bunch of tests. But, you know, they just tell me a few things and then I know what's going on. And then they tell me the test results and I'm like, oh, okay, well, that's what I would expect. You know, so if you don't, I guess, trust your clinical judgment, it might perhaps soothe your anxiety to confirm it with something. But also, you know, many, not just blood tests, but if we talk about medical imaging, there's a lot of data showing that specifically exposure to x-rays, especially from CT scans, mm-hmm. is very dangerous to our health and strongly correlated with cancer.
Iatrogenic.
Correct.
I'm sure we both have about a million questions. Vanessa, what would you like to ask? Because it's like, oh, so much.
No, I love that I don't place a lot of emphasis on blood work either. I agree. We should really be going with the symptoms and how the person is feeling. So I totally concur with that. And yeah, 100%. And I love that. So in your practice and in your consultations, as you stated, so you do all of this work. So you spend that time with that chunk amount of time with that person. You're looking for what is going on. And then what is your plan of action typically? What is I'm curious about. Like, what do you do to help them? Is it lifestyle interventions? What is it that you're doing to support them?
Right. Well, let me first say that the way that I provide this service is I'm not following the medical model. So I'm not doing anything except listening and providing educational information. So there's no, there's no exam, there's no diagnosis. I don't prescribe any treatment. I don't do any, like, I don't go to your house and give you IVs. Like some natural doctors, do things like that, or I don't have an office where people come in. It's all having a conversation just like we are. And if they can submit records or sometimes photographs of their skin lesions and things like that. So for the first part of a consultation with a new client, I'm spending most of the time just listening. I want to hear, from the beginning of when they had an issue up until the present and what they've done, how things have changed, what's going on in their life, and try to help them get to the bottom of what are the causal factors. And many times it's not what you think. Like, for example, psychological stressors often are involved in manifesting physical illness. And this is something the mainstream medical system doesn't take very seriously. So, I've seen examples of where there's infidelity in a marriage, and then there's a physical reaction to that, for example. Many times, illness can manifest after pregnancy as well. And there are, some specific reasons for that, and there's some scientific experiments looking at that. So once we can get some idea of what the causal factors of, then I present different options that are available that they can do, through their own action and motivation that have shown to be successful in addressing these problems. And I have all kinds of information that I can provide. Some of them are written protocols that people can investigate. Sometimes it's referral to other places where they provide a certain type of service, like to supervise prolonged fasting, for example, or biofield tuning, or some other kind of therapist that can help identify psychological aspects more clearly. So I like to present a lot of options to people if they're in existence, because everyone has their own unique propensities and style and belief system and worldview. And I want, it's well known that there's a major psychological component of healing, right? The placebo effect. And there's the placebo, the nocebo, right? Different aspects of it. And if you, so let's say that, you hear about fasting and you're like, oh my God, that just seems perfect for me. My appetite hasn't been good lately. I don't have a good relationship with food. I've seen my relative fast and have a good outcome or whatever. I want to do that. So if you have that kind of attitude about it, you're going to get a better result by fasting than if your attitude is, gosh, I'm really afraid I'm going to be hungry all the time. And this is, I've never been able to go without eating. If I'm on a long car trip, I get all panicky. Then you're not going to have as good of an outcome, right? So I want to present these options. Now, a lot of times people choose to use the protocols that I've written because that's why they came to me. They already have faith that, that I have some answers. And any of the things that I talk about or that I write my own protocols about, they're all based heavily on scientific research. So I know that a lot of people in the natural space kind of have faith that certain things could be effective, and perhaps they are, but for me personally, I have to have objective evidence that backs up something. And of course, I always try these procedures myself so that I have personal experience with them, and that I can iron out some of the practical details so that people will, you know, be able to successfully implement these procedures. And also my ethos is that I'm only interested in things that come from nature. So I don't recommend or teach about any technologies, like any machines that can help with healing, although I'm sure some of them can be effective. Certainly nothing made in a chemical or pharmaceutical factory, even vitamins and supplements. I don't think that those are what the body wants.
Yeah, I like that. Everything from nature. I like that a lot. That's cool. It's awesome.
So could you let us know about one of the things you sell on your website, that, and I don't know how to say it properly, spirogyric cilantro?
Yeah. So I, you know, the way you said that reminds me of the band Spirogyra from my teenage jazz exploration. But yeah, it's so that word is spagyric, and it's okay. A spagyric tincture is... So spagyrics is a branch of the alchemical sciences that is the medicinal branch. And it was attributed originally to Paracelsus. And Paracelsus is important because many doctors quote Paracelsus all the time without perhaps knowing who they're quoting. But the saying, and I'm not phrasing this perfectly, but everything is a poison, it just depends on the dose, comes from Paracelsus, right? And we know that's true even of water.
Yep.
Water can be toxic at a high dose. So it is a way of making a tincture or a medication that is much more sophisticated than making a typical tincture. And philosophically, it involves separating and distilling certain aspects of the plant, right? The body, the spirit, and the sulfur. And these are alchemical principles that, you know, you'd have to talk about at more length to fully understand, but, and then recombining them into something new. And that is, you know, an alchemical process is you take something, you burn it, you heat, you know, you destroy it, you break it down into its components, and then you recombine it, and it brings out different properties. And the idea is to harness the medicinal properties of the botanical or mineral that you're in the case of my product, it's cilantro, and bring out those properties in your tincture to optimize the healing benefits. And it is quite laborious to make such a tincture, but in my opinion, it is a far more potent therapeutic than simply, you know, getting some Everclear and soaking your cilantro for a couple of weeks and filtering it out. Although that could still be effective because that's the procedure used in some of the animal studies looking at cilantro. But cilantro is really amazing because you can find tons of studies showing that one, there's all these traditional uses in different cultures, mostly in Asia, and many of the same uses that they have in their traditional medicine have now been subjected to modern scientific studies, and the studies validate the uses. So in other words, it can moderate diabetes by reducing blood sugar and improving various metabolic parameters, and that's all been shown in animal studies. It's been shown to actually prevent the development of atherosclerotic plaques in experimental animals, as well as being an antiarrhythmic with as good an effect as propranolol for tachyarrhythmias. That's a beta blocker that's, you know, normally used in your cardiac life-saving algorithm for tachyarrhythmias. Wow. And cilantro is just as good in you know, one study that was done. So there's all this preliminary evidence showing a variety of very potent therapeutic benefits of cilantro, even that it can reverse organ damage from heavy metal poisoning, right? Like this has been shown in the kidneys and in the brain with lead, arsenic, and cadmium. So there should be a lot of interest to, you know, do human clinical trials, right? Cilantro is not harmful. We use it in food all the time. But yet all that you can find really in the mainstream is, you know, fact check articles that say, oh, you know, false claims about cilantro. And then you go to the papers and you say, oh, the papers actually just reported this exact thing that you're that this fact checking says they didn't report, right? It's like no one's going to click the link and look at the paper. So, you know, in my opinion, this is such an underutilized product that has vast applications. So it's clearly been demonstrated to not only remove or help your body remove heavy metals from various organs, like the bone, the brain, and the kidney have been demonstrated in multiple animal studies. It reverses oxidative damage in the organs that's caused by heavy metals. It prevents and possibly will reverse atherosclerotic plaques. It vastly improves glucose metabolism in people with diabetes. And it has even been shown to increase cognitive functions in rats, like increase their memory. So there's potential applications for dementia and neurodegenerative diseases. And, you know, so these, obviously, this evidence is quite robust, but there could be so much more. This could be, you know, kind of a miracle remedy if anyone actually knew about it. Mm-hmm. So, you know, that's why I sell this product, because it, you know, try to look for it elsewhere. You're not going to find it. And there's so much potential benefit here that, you know, we have to, I mean, you can obviously just eat cilantro, but you'd have to eat quite a bit of it to get the benefit. And you have to be very careful where you source it, because cilantro is so good about binding heavy metals. If there are any metals in the soil where it's grown, then they're going to be in the cilantro as well. And that doesn't mean that the cilantro is going to poison you with those metals. It'll hold on to them, but it won't be able to take heavy metals out of your body because it'll already be saturated.
So how do you source yours? I mean, do you grow them? Do you grow it hydroponically, or how do you ensure that it's clean?
Yeah, so it's grown completely organically with soil testing from a few local growers to where the Spagyricist is who manufactures it for me. And he actually freeze dries it before making the tincture because it improves the ability of the spirits to absorb the chemicals from the cilantro plant. But yeah, so if anyone is going to make a cilantro tincture or purchase one, make sure that the cilantro that's used to manufacture it is very carefully sourced so that it doesn't contain any toxins. So in other words, cilantro can be used to help purify your soil. If you grow it and then you'd have to make sure you remove the plant after the growing cycle, don't let it decompose back into that soil, because then those toxins will go back in there. But this, you know, there are a variety of plants that have these properties, and cilantro is one of them.
Yeah, so, sounds like a great product. Sounds like it'd be really supportive, and yeah, something that we should be learning more about for sure. So thank you for sharing it with us.
My pleasure.
There's so much more we haven't been able to touch on. So I'm like, oh no, we're running out of time. Like, you have your online community, right, that you've been fostering, and so much, so much more than there's the whole, I don't know how to frame it, but, you know, the exiting the legal system and whatnot. So there's oh my gosh, how can we put a little bit of that?
I mean, I can really just summarize all my efforts, you know, have one goal in common.
Yes.
Which is, like, it's time for us to learn the truth about how our world works and how we fit in. And that doesn't just involve health, of course, even though I originally came to this from the health perspective. It involves, you know, all aspects, our relationships and family, our spirituality, our relationship with nature. All these aspects are incorporated into the fellowship, which is my membership platform. It's because we all are a community of fellows trying to essentially embody the truth in our day-to-day lives. And that's a lifelong journey. So we uncover various aspects of the truth in different parts of our lives. Then once we fully understand that and take it in, we try to actually incorporate that into day-to-day action, right? Like I described, you know, getting out of my license contract to practice medicine, right, is me taking what I knew about the truth and then actually acting on that in my life to bring about a different way of living and existing. And so, you know, this is my overall mission. And of course, I have looked into the law and commerce systems as well, and uncovered a lot of truth and started to take a variety of different actions over the past years there as well. And, you know, in many other areas, like I just look at living in my life as that, you know, I'm on this earth as a man under God, and that I'm supposed to live a good life and I'm supposed to contribute to the world in some meaningful way. And I don't pay too close attention to the laws and regulations and policies that are enacted around me because they don't really apply to me. Now, when I engage in commerce, I agree to follow certain rules and policies, and I do that, but only in a certain role, not in my role as a man. Mm-hmm. So I can, you know, for example, just like we go to work right now. A lot of us may not work or we work at home, but just we've had the experience in our life of going to a job. And when we're putting on that uniform or that ID badge of that job, we have a different role, right? We have our employer set forth rules, right? It might be a dress code, a code of conduct, right? We can't just walk away. We can't, you know, curse out the customers or, start downing beers while we're working, right? Or all these things, right? We don't have the freedom because we've agreed to follow a certain set of rules. But then as soon as we walk out of that door and take our badge and our uniform off, now we are a man and woman again, right? Mm-hmm. In under our own dominion. And then we can choose how we want to spend our time, what we want to do. We make up our own rules or follow, you know, the rules of nature, of natural law, that mm-hmm. we don't infringe upon other people's freedom, essentially. But other than that, we make our own choices. And it's the same way that I live. I may not choose to be an employee on a full-time basis for anyone, but I do, you know, act in that role in commerce, you know, representing a business, essentially. And I make sure that in that role that I do what is dictated by the rules of commerce, but then I step out of that role and I'm back under God's law.
Mm-hmm. How to operate in the public and private. Yep. And know who you are in each space. So mm-hmm.
exactly. So I don't, you know, I don't believe that we should just deny our participation in the public and mm-hmm. try to be, you know, completely private. And I don't even think that's really possible, because how are we going to, you know, buy anything? Like, how are we going to obtain resources? Because as soon as mm-hmm. we use a Federal Reserve note, we're in commerce.
Mm-hmm.
Or write a check. So, you know, I mean, you can't supply everything that you need unless you want to be reclusive and just rely completely on the land and
bartering,
you know, barter with your neighbors for everything. But that would be, you know, very, very, very difficult.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah. This has been so illuminating. I just love to hear your calm delivery of all of this wisdom. You know, when you look you up online, It's like McGill, I think it says that the psychiatrist who calmly denies reality is how they describe
Ah, that's perfect.
I would say, you know, like you say, recovering psychiatrist who is embracing the truth. And yes, reality can be subjective, but what your truth is. So I love that. And obviously, it's resonating with people because you seem to be thriving and your fellowship is hopefully growing. And I want to check that out. And it's just fantastic that you are standing up for your truth, and that service is part of what you're offering people, is being the leader, right? Being not having not caving to the fear of that you can get through the pushback, because I'm sure you've gotten your fair share of that, you know, criticism and pushback and people trying to disparage you and whatnot. So
I experience that on an ongoing basis, and I think that is a part of the challenge of making progress. You know, if anyone out there just thinks back to, you know, what are the top achievements in your life that you've carried out, and then think about what effort you had to put in to achieve those goals. And I'll guarantee that you faced adversity and that you had to work really hard. Because the nature of life on Earth is that their rewards don't come easy. And so this is, you know, the price that we have to pay if we want to move forward, that we're going to be challenged, that relationships are going to be disrupted because of dissonance on the other party. And the systems that we try to interact with in the appropriate way are going to resist us, right? So, you know, in the law, this is quite obvious in my journey right now, where I'm simply trying to advocate for myself in my proper legal role and abide by the actual statute and case law. And when I communicate that to various other parties that I have contracts with, they want to resist that. They in fact, they're willing to even take me to court to resist it. So that generates, you know, fear. It's in they use intimidation. You know, they threaten to take property away from you and such. And it's challenging to deal with. And I purposely put myself in that situation. Sometimes I regret it, but I am just driven to break through, because on the other side of that is where things improve, and then you can make further progress. And the same thing that I did with medicine, you know, that I did face a lot of scrutiny, ridicule, even anger. And yet, on the other side of that was validation and a new community and the opportunity, you know, to help other people move in the same direction.
I love Beautifully said.
that.
Do you have
Very
any, Andy, do you have anything you want to leave our listeners with? Any piece of advice, word of advice? It could be on anything, really.
well. You know, certainly one of my calls to action is to become your own health authority. And I think it really fits with all the philosophy I've discussed here today. And if anyone, you know, is unfamiliar with my platforms or my educational resources, I would encourage you to take a look at my website at andrewkaufmanmd.com, because there is a lot of free educational material, like my Healthy Living live stream, which is a weekly. Really, lecture on a variety of health-related subjects. I have courses. I have the membership where I have monthly master classes and Q&As. I have a series of workshops on different health topics that, you know, include various protocols and then my consultation service. So, I love to teach. I feel it's my natural role. And, you know, I want to just spread this information to as many people as possible so that you can be your own health authorities in your life. So take the time and investigate it and see if it resonates with you.
Yes, absolutely. Empower yourselves. For everyone who's
Mm-hmm.
listening, go check out Dr. Kaufman, Andy's website. It's beautiful. He's got a lot of collaborations with other truth seekers and health freedom advocates. So we so appreciate your time today and really are grateful for having you on the show.
Yes, thank you so much for coming on.
It's definitely been a pleasure and an interesting high-level discussion.
Thanks so much for joining today's show. For more information about Heather and her offerings, see her Instagram at Heather Crimson or go to her website at enlightenedmood.com.
And for more information about Vanessa's offerings, visit her Instagram at bright_light_wellness and her website at brightlightwellnesscoach.com. See you next week.